Thanks for taking the time to download and listen to this podcast from CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady, and this is Andrew H. Smith. So we are now, what, four games and possibly just two wins away from the title. Andrew, what did you make of Sunday's game as a whole before we talk in the detail?
Yeah, acceptable. For this time of the season, with the tensions that exist and with so much getting poured into these games, they're always going to be kind of white-knuckle affairs. I think it's very rare that they're not. I think we've all got out of the habit of living in a kind of title race post-split world, because they haven't really existed. The last one, really, when it was this tight, was 2011. So I think with everything, with the context and everything going on, I think Celtic did okay. I think Celtic, it was fine. It was fine. There was moments, you know, where it like a squeaky bum time, but I think largely it was kind of cushy bum time.
Actually, somebody sent me a message straight after the game saying that was rubbish, whatever. And I said, could have been worse. We could have been in a title run-in, gone up to Dens Park and lost 5-1. I always think how social media would have coped back then.
Oh, don't. I remember that.
With a 5-1 defeat at Dens Park.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. I remember that day. Oh, that was a horrible, horrible, horrible. You know, it was behind the goal. Oh, see the kind of the venom. There wasn't social media, but the venom was in person in those days. You know, I think I can genuinely remember a guy almost frothing. You know, like, yeah. Oh, it was horrendous. Horrendous. God, you've triggered me, as the kids would say. You know, like, you all need therapy after.
But it's true. I mean, memory. I mean, that's the thing that I think sometimes people.
Yeah, and it came from nowhere that day.
No, absolutely, it did, and that was it. Snooker's the season. Somebody said to me, Dundee had five chances and scored all five goals, and I subsequently found stuff on found the game on YouTube, and it really is. Dundee just had five chances and scored all five of them.
Yeah. Yeah, and I remember Big Roy rampaging up the pitch, trying to rescue the situation. Did he score Celtic's goal that day? Like, do we need to explain to people what we're talking about?
You can explain to younger people under the age of 50.
Was it 83-84 season? Was it?
No, I think it was, was it not 80?
Was it?
But I'm doing this with absolutely no research. I'm going to try and Google it while you're talking through the.
No, you're right. Because I'm thinking Aberdeen, because, you know, I used to argue with, I've got a lot of Aberdeen sporting friends, and I say, we Celtic.
19th of April 1980, it was almost 44 years to the day.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Yeah, that was what began the kind of the Fergie revolution, really. Because Celtic should never have let that happen. They should have won that title, and they should have won the next one that Aberdeen won, I think, 2 years later. Celtic should have won those titles. People talk about it always kind of annoys me. People talk about the new firm, because in those late 70s, early 80s, that was my formative period, starting to go to all the away games. It was Aberdeen Celtic. That was the duopoly. Okay, Dundee United did win a title, but they won one title. You know, otherwise it was. And actually, yeah, you know the famous statistic that I think while Ferguson was manager at Aberdeen, Celtic won more leagues than Aberdeen did. But they should have won far more leagues than Aberdeen did.
I'm just putting in Celtic 1979-80. So it was virtually to the day, and Aberdeen won that league by a point. Celtic FC season 1979-80. Aberdeen won it by a point in the season, but it was 2 points for a win. But if you look at that run into the season, we, 5th of April, lose away at Aberdeen. Sorry, lose at home to Aberdeen, which puts them in it. 8th of April, we lose away to Dundee United. 16th of April, we beat Kilmarnock 2-0. 19th of April, we lose away to Dundee 5-1. Then 23rd of April, we lose at home again to Aberdeen.
Yeah.
Then we beat Partick Thistle, beat Dundee, and draw with St Mirren. But the draw with St Mirren, I think we were 10 goals behind Aberdeen. So although we drew with St Mirren and lost the league by a point, if we'd beaten St Mirren, they'd have won the league. I think they won it effectively at Easter Road. They hadn't actually won it at that point, but it was on goal difference they'd effectively won it that season. But if you look at that, I mean, there's 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 games to go. We lose 4 games out of the 8 games to go, including, and it came down, it could have come down to goal difference if we'd won at Love Street in the last game. We lost 4 goals to Dundee, you know, by losing 5-1. And then we lose at home to Aberdeen 3-1, which is a 4-goal swing. So there, and then we lose 3-0 at Dundee United. So it's not just that we lost those 4 games. The goal difference was in three of those four games. Because it's a 4-goal swing to Aberdeen, 4 at Dundee.
Lost them heavily. Did Celtic have the equivalent of... Did Celtic have the equivalent of kind of James Tavernier and Conor Goldson in the back four there? When the heat come on, you know? So did the crumble, you know? Like, do you know, I remember meeting my cousin, had moved to Paisley not too long before that, so I bumped into him at that 1-1 game at Love Street in the last day of the season, and he was crying, but there was actually still supporters, like, cheering the team and kind of serenading them off the pitch, and he threw his tears, he said, "That's what makes Celtic different." I always remember that. That's what makes Celtic different. You know, that they wouldn't happen now. People have changed, and the way that people respond to disappointment or upset has changed. But they were still given a send off. And when you think that is one of the most spectacular collapses, I was wrong about that Dundee coming from nowhere. It came from everywhere, really, because they just crashed. They just crashed.
Oh, just counting up, out of the last 19 games, we won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. We won 7 out of the last 19 games. So in the second half of the season, more or less, we won just 7 games. We drew on the 29th of December to Rangers at home, beat Dundee United, and then drew 4 games in a row. I mean, to be fair, 3 of them were away, Easter Road, Pittodrie and Partick Thistle. But then we drew with Dundee at home, lost away to Morton. Sorry, we beat Morton away. And then we drew with St Mirren and Kilmarnock. And then out of the last 9 games, we lost 4. So yeah, it's very different times.
Very different times. And maybe, and I know some of my Celtic support and kind of kin think I'm too soft on the modern day Celtic, and maybe this is the, and my 14 year old maybe thinks that as well, because he's never seen a run like that. Even in the COVID year, Celtics didn't have a run like that. You know, they did a lot of draws, but they didn't have that many defeats, has to be said. So in his Celtic sporting lifetime, which is 7 or 8 years, when he's really known what's been happening, he's never known anything like that. And you might never know anything like that again. And that was a Celtic team that
for
the title.
I mean, I suppose that's one of the differences between with 3 points for a win. And actually, that back then, a draw compared to a victory wasn't as catastrophic as it is now in terms of dropping 2 points.
Yeah.
So, It's not quite the same. Anyway, that's our trip down memory lane it's never as bad as that. But it's not, and people forget the pressure that's in these games.
Oh yeah, and you think the control Celtic had for the first 25 minutes on Saturday. It's just when they can't get that goal, you see the undulations within performances. That's what we've seen this season. A good half, a bad half. A good 25 minutes, a bad 20 minutes. Or they seem to lose it. There is a kind of fragility that can't quite be explained. But what I would say is what Sunday, and this is maybe controversial, although I know some of the sites have been talking about this, I don't think Callum McGregor's right at the moment. I don't think it's necessarily fair for him to be. I know we all say about, you know, he's influencing the team beyond just merely what he offers as a player. Yeah, there is an element of that. But if, as a player, if you're struggling, then your influence beyond that diminishes likewise. I'm not sure that I would be starting Callum McGregor against Hearts on Saturday. I just don't feel that he's right. I don't know if he's trying to push himself through this. And people have said to me that, I think it was his Achilles. So these Achilles injuries are quite awkward to really get yourself completely remedied from, to really get yourself back to 100%. It can take a long time.
And I mean, last week when we spoke, I said that I felt if a Watter had been on the pitch, Aberdeen wouldn't have scored their first goal because of where it came from. And I thought on Sunday, I thought we had more control over the middle of the park when Callum McGregor went off. And I'm a massive Callum McGregor fan. I think he's just such a brilliant class act because he finds space.
Likewise.
For me, football's all about space. And he finds it. But if he's just not right, just not got himself back, I'm wondering if he's better. I mean, I understand the manager wants his leadership qualities on the pitch. Joe Hart's a leader again, as you talked about last week. Joe Hart's a leader. Cameron Carter-Vickers appears to be a leader. If you're wanting to get McGregor involved.
Yeah. He really seems to have stepped that up.
He does. He does. He has. Yeah. And if you're wanting to get McGregor involved, might it be better him coming on when there's 25 minutes to go and everybody in the pitch is a bit more tired. So if he's not quite there, he's able to cope better with the pace of the game. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it might be kind of irrelevant anyway because there's the likelihood that Rodgers wouldn't start Callum McGregor right now for these games is probably minimal, you know, like, so therefore he will play. But it's just, as I say, I think that's something that perhaps if you were being bold, you know, you could perhaps improve on. Because I think Iwata did really come into his own having that run of games. I think I've seen a different Iwata for the, I know he was criticised for, and he actually talked about it afterwards, dwelling too long on the ball at Tynecastle. But I think he's a guy who learns, and I think he's a guy who understood where he was, what he had to improve upon, and subsequently has improved upon it.
So a few people commented last week that we actually managed to bypass the impact that James Forrest had in the Cup semi-final when he came on. So the one thing that we certainly can't do, talking about the Dundee game, is bypass the impact that James Forrest had on that game. The old man's getting Celtic across the line. First goal was just brilliant.
Well, again, it was a stunning strike. And that's what you find. Like, there's no bigger James Forrest fan than me. You just need to look at the things online. Just before his testimonial, I wrote a piece about the prophet unappreciated in his own land because I think he's been hideously underappreciated. And it's not, I know it's de rigueur now to say that, but I've been saying it for years. Because I did a piece about 3 or 4 years ago about how there'd only been about 7 or 8 players who'd scored in, I think it was at that time, 11 or 12 consecutive league seasons. And now he's chopped out a few of them now. I think it might only be like Billy Dodds or whatever. There's only 2 or 3 players who've actually, in the history of Scottish football, have scored, like have had this kind of longevity. So Forrest is one I've been crying out for. Forrest, I think he should have had more game time. I know I see that Brendan Rodgers is quite sensitive about it because he said that when he started him on Sunday, I think he said pre-match, did he, that he now had the same number of starts as he had last season. He's not actually true in the sense he had five starts last season and he's had four starts this season now with 20 substitute appearances, whereas he only had 18 substitute appearances last season. So he's been pretty much in the same ballpark. He was injured for part of last season, though, and he doesn't seem to have been as injured this season. But I just think Rodgers was right that he is his best winger. And I always remember Rodgers talking about he said he'd never seen a player take the ball in the half turn better. And if you watch him, that way he can take the ball, as he's saying, on the half turn, the way he can just take it, he very rarely loses the ball. He seems to have come in back into the team with a mission to score as well, which is we hadn't seen a lot of, consistently getting shots on target, even beyond his goals. He's consistently looking to make that impact, which is more direct than you perhaps all the other wingers are. You know, how often do we see Celtic wingers coming in? I know Kuhn tries it occasionally, but they're so often they're off target. But it's incredible for us, his impact, but it's also incredible to think, do you know what, he's 14 seasons where he has been a first team squad member, although he's played 15 seasons. The first season he was only in for a couple of months or so. But he's 14 seasons when he's been a first team member. You know, there's only like five of those 14 seasons he scored more league goals than he scored this season.
Which I suppose you were saying about him not being appreciated. And he's scoring. And I suppose that's where it stems from, that people are looking at a player who's been so involved, so creative. I suppose the reason for the lack of appreciation might be from he should be scoring more goals, thought process.
Yeah. Well, there was a period between 2017 and up to the pandemic where he averaged between his goals and his assists, he was involved in almost 100 goal actions across three seasons. That output for the winger, which it was Jota levels and Abada, he had that output before the two of them. And then obviously he had the injury during the kind of finalist season. And when you think about what all went wrong for Celtic, losing Julian and him were two huge factors for Celtic's kind of collapse that season.
Yeah.
Because actually when he went out injured, I think Celtic had played something 11 games and lost one of them. And then it was only, if you remember, when he come back in and then they had a 6-0 against Livingston and he just ran them ragged. It was his first start in 6 months, but he got an injury again and he was out of the team again. So, when you think about what he's been able to contribute to Celtic, he's got an incredible career for a guy who isn't really appreciated. He is one of the greats, but people will never see him as one of the greats. And I chew over and chew over and try to think to myself why it might be. And I think one of the kind of blots on his kind of copybook is he's not had that many great games against Rangers, has he? I think he's only got...
No, he's not. I think
he's only got two goals against Rangers or something like that in his career.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And the other thing, even if we expand on that, he has never had a good game at Ibrox. He's not alone in that. I'll never forget, I got close to the Japanese journalist who followed Nakamura. Nakamura's last game at Ibrox, Rangers won 1-0. 2009, if you remember. It was a horrible game. Celtic were struggling to score goals, and if I'm remembering this correctly, I think Gordon Strachan played, and I thought it was a great idea, he played Venegard Hesselink and Samaras as a meaty front two, but it just didn't happen. They didn't get any service. Was it Stephen Davis scored the winner for Rangers? But anyway, and they always got 5 minutes with Nakamura after it. And I come back and I said to Daisuke, because that was one of the guys looking at, and I said, what's he saying? He said that he's really hacked off. He's really hacked off because he said this was his last chance to make an impression at Ibrox, because he knew across his 4 years he'd never done that. And he never did. He never played well at Ibrox. Mm-hmm. Sean Maloney, apart from coming on when the game was won, and if you remember when he was the kind of 17-year-old, didn't really have a good game at Ibrox.
Yes, that's right. Yep.
Yeah. Aidan McGeady never played well at Ibrox. I'm trying to think. Jota, I mean, even Jota, last season, I just thought he was swinging the lead. You know, when they lost that 3-0 at Ibrox last season. I know it didn't matter, mm-hmm. but did he ever really make that much an impression at Ibrox? Seems to have a bit of a graveyard for some.
I wonder if it's for some. Well, I wonder if for some of the people you mentioned, part of the problem is they try too hard. You know, again, because they're playing wide, so they're not involved in the game every minute of the game. Obviously, most of the time that Celtic play in domestic football, we're always in the front foot, playing in the final third. Ibrox is the one place where that might not happen so much. And maybe they actually try too hard to make it happen. And it just doesn't. Instead of them, you know, they're desperate to stamp their authority on at Ibrox instead of just letting it happen like it would happen everywhere else. Maybe that's the issue with so many of them.
Nakamura was desperate, you know, and he was desperate that day. He was absolutely, he knew it. And actually, I've actually done Jota a disservice because I think the 2-1 win, did he score that day actually? You know, the Ange's first mm-hmm. season? And the April one with the glass and Joe Hart's penalty box and all that. Sure, did he score that day? Apologies if my memory's...
I can't remember.
The 56-year-old memory.
I've better memories of the 1980 Celtic losing... April 1980 Celtic losing 5-1 to Dundee than I did.
I know.
I
don't know why.
This is going to sound very... sort of almost superior here, but maybe it's because we've won so many times against Rangers that they all start to merge into one.
That's true, because even in the years,
you know, growing up for us in the 80s, getting a victory at Ibrox was huge.
It was
early 90s.
Even when Rangers weren't challenging for the title, you know, Celtic didn't always have a great record against them. Even though that Rangers weren't mm-hmm. their challenger. They were just their kind of spoiler. Rangers were just trying to spoil it for Celtic. You know, when Celtic were in these battles, mainly with Aberdeen, but for a couple of seasons, certainly Dundee United were in it, you know? But Rangers were never in it. You know, but they could spoil it. They could spoil it for Celtic.
So... back on to the Dundee game, brilliant strike from Forrest. I don't think that Kyogo necessarily meant to play the ball that he played to Forrest for Forrest to hit that, but it was just, everything about it was just so instinctive from Forrest. He just swiveled his hips, got his foot down. And
it was, the way he cut across it, yeah. And it was just such a kind of pristine contact he made on it. He hit it exactly the way that he hit the sweet. It was like the sweet spot, wasn't it? It was terrific. And he's a lovely guy. Just so unaffected by it all. I know these things have got him. I've got to say this every week. Like, you know, people I like or don't like, but just like judging them by their personalities. But you just couldn't wish for. You couldn't. You know. You everything he gets. You know, like he deserves. Just, and yeah, I noticed Ida the other week saying about coming into Celtic and how much he'd enjoyed the dressing room and how much, you know, he held these guys, you know, like real kind of the awe he had for them. And the ones they mentioned, this was while Forrest had hardly played. It was a couple of 5 minutes here, 2 minutes there. And he mentioned Forrest. said, you know, share a dressing room with a guy like that. You know, but, you know, what kind of privilege it was. So these guys, they see what he is and they see what Celtic means to him, you know. You saw it. I mean, we talk about being unassuming, but he was making sure he was doing the old, like, thumping the badge, wasn't he, when he scored the other day?
He was. And amongst the support, the thing I sense this season when Forrest comes on in games, in the 20 games he's come on as a sub, there's almost a sort of a relaxing amongst the support of, well, Jamesy Forrest is now on, so at least the worst that's going to happen is they will not fuck it up.
Yeah.
There's always like a relief of, like, okay, there's someone that I trust is now on the pitch. So, okay, he might not score or he might not create something, but I have faith that the ball's just not going to get wasted every time he goes out wide. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a legitimate kind of comfort to have. Because, as I said earlier, he very rarely loses the ball. He doesn't play the Palma silly pass. I think Palma did that again after you gone on about it last week. I think he actually had one again on Sunday, did he not? You think, why are you playing that pass?
Which then gets on to the second goal from Forrest, which at the time you're thinking, well, that's it. Game over. Dundee are not going to score two goals. Because it was a brilliant, you know, it was a brilliant example of a team that presses and the press winning the ball back. But Forrest still had a lot to do, but made it look, as Brendan Rodgers said, he made it look easy.
He did.
He still had a lot to do to get there and then put the ball in the back of the net.
It was emphatic. That was, it was just, he just felt that he was just going to bury this. And he just buried it. I know it went between the keeper's legs, but it was just a guy clinical, you know? And it's like, he's feeling it right now. It's just, you always worry that there's a wee niggle round the corner. Although, oddly, the kind of late stage Forrest might be troubled less by those, you know, because maybe he's not quite got the half yard they had. So therefore, he's not like a lot of wingers do. They really put pressure on certain muscles because of the way they're springing. But if he's not necessarily that kind of player now, or he's not always doing that, although he did. There was one in the first half where he stood up across and it was brilliant. He got to the byline. He kind of carved it round in a way you felt it would have just, it might have gone out. And he just hung it up. It was a beautiful cross that really deserved to be kind of put away. But like maybe these kind of injuries, if you look at it, Phil O'Donnell, lots of injuries. Again, his running gait. And Forrest is a wee bit like that. His running gait, apparently Phil O'Donnell almost tried to fit in a pace and a half or a stride and a half into a stride just because of the way that he almost ran, you know, as if he was kind of chasing himself.
Uh-huh, yep.
But if he kind of sorted that out, and God rest his soul, but his last few years, he didn't have the same injury problems that he'd had all through his mid-20s. And maybe this is, you get to know your body, I suppose, a little better. And Forrest is a guy who seems to genuinely know how he wants to influence the game. It does look as if he's elevated. I mean, who'd have thought that there's no way he won't start on Saturday? And if he does start on Saturday and does well again, maybe this is his time. Although he did score against Rangers the 5-0 day that Celtic kind of sealed the league. But to do it, if he did it against Rangers this time around, you know, it would be, it would kind of lay to rest a myth in a way, you know, that they can't really turn it on against a Rangers when it matters.
Do you know, I just as we're talking about and extolling the virtues of Forrest, and there's a part of me thinking that I can just see Forrest think sort of attitude is there's four games to go here. There's three wins. I'm just going to make sure we get over the line. And I'm wondering if actually Brendan playing Forrest and playing McGregor, even though we don't think he's fit. Might be part of that thing of, see, at this point, I need people with the mentality that will just make sure that we get over the line in each game.
Yeah. And also the people that you know how much it matters to them.
Yep.
For Celtic to go over the line. That's important as well. These guys, you know what I mean? They live and breathe it. And it really means everything to them. You could tell that on Sunday, how much it meant to Forrest. And we've seen countless examples of how much it means to McGregor. People who really know that you can't let this slip. You know, you cannot let this slip. By the way, I did check Jota. Jota never scored at Ibrox in his Celtic career, so I'm adding him to the list. We need a bloody winger that does it at Ibrox.
Is that you, Wilfie Smith? You're being added to the list. That's it.
Cards marked. Come the day of the revolution.
Exactly. Come the revolution. You're on the list. Again, another one for the kids. The thing about Dundee then getting that goal back, I think this is what I will give the team all the sympathy for at this stage, in that but it doesn't really matter. We just need to make sure that we don't blow it now, because win the next two games and, well, there'd need to be a massive goal difference swing in the last two games. Celtic need to lose both. Rangers need to win both, and by a reasonable margin. So it is just go through these next two games, make sure you win them. I suppose that then makes the mentality when you go 2-1 down with whatever it was, 10, 11 minutes to go to Dundee, there is a different mentality on the players of the most important thing from this stage on is not to lose this game. Whereas if you're playing that game in September, you might go, oh, we've lost a goal, let's go back up and go and score a third. Because you've got the rest of the season if that doesn't work. Whereas you've not got the rest of the season. You've let in one goal, make sure you don't let in a second.
That's why the dynamics are so different at this stage in the season. Because all that is poured in to every 5-minute, 10-minute spell. Really, at this point. Because you think to yourself, everything could change. Everything could be lost here. And you could see it, like, watching. You saw it from the other side. You could tell that when the time was draining away for them at Dens, and they didn't really look like scoring, you could tell they felt like, oh no, the league season's gone down the pan here. And likewise, when it was happening at Dingwall, when you lose these games late in the season, you do sense that it's so different, because as you say, you don't have the months to make it up. You don't necessarily have the weeks to make it up, never mind the months.
Yeah, and you can see that. I mean, you know, if I think back, and if you look back at the stats, I mean, we just went through the 1979-80 season, and I can think of Tommy Burns's last season. Seasons like that where your team's just not firing all cylinders. When you look back at the bare statistics, it's never mathematically certain until right to the very end, but if you know you're not firing in cylinders, on all cylinders, you just think they'll find a way of getting over the line, and you start to lose confidence, and I'm not sure we will, and that starts to seep. You can just see in the game, in the titles when we've not won them going in through, I mean, Martin Neal's last season, when what was it, we were 5 points clear with three games to go or something like that, and we managed to blow it. But all through that season, there was just a culture of, even the games we win, we were winning that season. We were only just getting over the line. And my mate, one of my mates who's a Rangers fan, I don't think I've had an in-game text from him all season where he's praised the way his team have been playing. And particularly, you mentioned him earlier, Goldson and Tavernier.
I do think, God, we might be proven wrong here and we might be left with egg in our face. I do think that scenario you're talking about, which us older generation who remember Rangers 9 in a row and Celtic running them close, but you never felt they quite had it to get over the line. I think with what's happened to Rangers in the last couple of weeks, I don't really know if their players and certainly their supporters believe that they're going to be able to do enough. And I think this Celtic team believe that they have it in them to do enough. And that's crucial.
Which then leads on to Saturday. So Celtic play first this weekend. Really strange occurrence. Both of the two biggest teams in Glasgow are playing in Glasgow at the same weekend. We play Saturday, Rangers play Sunday at home, which is really, really, really peculiar. But that whole thing of having that advantage of, you know, if Celtic were to win on Saturday, the you know, being a cricket fan, I always talk about scoreboard pressure. Scoreboard pressure on Rangers.
Yeah.
You know, you can just imagine what the mood will be like at half-time in that game if Rangers are not in the lead.
Oh, I know. And it's like, Rangers supporters were turning up these games thinking, we're watching the champions elect. I mean, there was a feeling. And it wasn't even just within the Rangers camp. There was plenty within the Celtic camp that were ready to chuck it. Thought this the Clement factor was going to swing it. For it to swing back again. And pretty violently swing back. It eats into every fibre of your being, really. So it's really that you just feel as if, like, the world's against you, but, you know, you feel as if the heart's been ripped out of your world. I think that's what the Rangers as a club collectively have been left feeling by the last month. The heart's been ripped out of their kind of football world. And it's hard for that not to, seep into every single game, every single 15 minutes. You can see it sometimes when they pan to the crowds, when it's not going well for Rangers. You know, there's just no way that their support will carry them through on Sunday if it's not going well. Whereas, and I think the Celtic sport decided that it was time for them to be with the team rather than thinking, we're going to kind of lose our patience with them. And I think, St. Patrick's Day game? Even Rogers, he noted it afterwards, said there was a different atmosphere from minute one. What game was that? And I turned to my boy and said that. I said, they've come here to praise their team, not to bury them. And it was very different from what we'd seen throughout the winter months.
Yep.
What game was
and
that?
I think you're right. I think there's been a mood change of, do you know what? Summer transfer window wasn't great. And it was really frustrating to not have £70 million in the bank and not get players who are better than the first team players we had. And that's been our beef and that's been our grief with the board. However, the one thing we don't want is Rangers win the league. So no matter what, we're now, from this point on, let's back the team and hopefully they've learned the lesson that they can scrape by. And next season, we don't repeat last summer's transfer window. That seems to be the sort of general, certainly the Celtic fans that I know, that's been their attitude. And you can see that with the support.
Yeah, there was a big You'll Never Walk Alone or something. There was a really kind of, there was quite a kind of moving rendition before it, and you thought, well, they've come here today to be a support. What game was that? Was it just before the Dundee 7-1?
I think it was after we lost at Tynecastle.
Was it? It might have been. Hold on.
And perhaps maybe the refereeing decisions in that game sort of galvanised, which then gets me back onto the, you mentioned the word
heart. Right. It was the St. Johnstone game, the 3-1 St. Johnstone game. It was.
So we've got
16th of March, so it was almost St. Paddy's Day.
So we've got Hearts on Saturday, and Hearts have beaten us twice this season. Once at Tynecastle, once at Celtic Park. So they'll be going into the game. I keep saying this. I've got a friend who's a long-term Hearts fan. He bemoans that Hearts try harder against Celtic than Rangers. So that's a Hearts fan saying that. They will be trying. against us on Saturday.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when was the last time? My boy asked me the other day, and I didn't have a chance to check it. He said, when was the last time a Scottish team beat Celtic? He said, outside the Rangers, a Scottish team beat Celtic three times in a season, you know, in the league.
I don't think it's happened this century. I don't think it's happened this century.
No, it's definitely not happened this century. Maybe you're going back to where we started with Aberdeen, like winning titles. It probably is. Yeah, even back to the 80s. I wouldn't be surprised.
What's your expectation for the game on Saturday?
I mean, I think there'll always be kind of nervy moments, but the good thing, in some ways you might think, oh, Hearts have beaten Celtic twice this season. That's a real kind of, oh, that kind of spreads agitation. But I would say Celtic players, I know it's not, it doesn't all come down to that, but I think, my God, we owe Hearts one this season. We can't, you know. So it's not as if they're going into a game where they think, well, we should win this, okay. They think, gee whiz, remember how it felt when Hearts won, you know, at Celtic Park in December. So their minds, is, if it needed any more sharpening, and I know it probably doesn't, but actually think the recent past history, is to be at Celtic's benefit rather than something to.
So are you expecting a Celtic victory? I'm just.
I think they'll be okay. And we could get that fast start that there hasn't been enough of these fast starts and blowing teams away. And they haven't scored goals. Yeah, but you.
Well, Maeda's going to be fit for the game. So I could see Forrest on the right, Maeda on the left.
Just give him minutes off the bench. He's not going to drop Forrest, is he?
The biggest thing is to make sure he's fit. No, but the biggest thing, I suppose, is to make sure he's fit for the Rangers.
Yeah, it's one more week on. If you give him 30 minutes or something, Forrest 60 or so, you know, give him the last half hour, that should get him up to speed, sort of. You know, he's not been out that long, so he's not lost that much fitness, Rogers was saying the other day. So I think it's going to be fine this weekend.
And
I know this will pin somewhere if it's not.
Well, I hope you're right.
No, I think I'm confident you'll be right.
I hope you're right, and I expect you are going to be right.
Yeah. This, I think they've got the bit between their teeth, especially the home games now. The crowd, synergies, we talk about synergies. It's like the team and the support and the manager. There's one again, you know. There's a unity there that hasn't really been there for the last 9 months.
Right, well, with that, I will say, Andrew Smith, thanks very much.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
I hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon, and there will definitely be more from Andrew coming soon. We've got some exciting news here at CelticUnderground.net, so keep your eyes peeled on our social media. I will say no more, but if you go onto our website, CelticUnderground.net, at the start of May, you may hear some exciting news about forthcoming explosion of content that we're going to be having here, with some quality writing for once, and listening. Anyway, enough of me. That was me, Harry Brady, with him, Andrew H. Smith. And this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.